Radical Russ Belville.
What did he say? What did he say?
Bring him on.
A wiretap requires a court order. One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, everyone. Use less drugs. Hello, North America, and welcome to Thanksgiving weekend. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I'm broadcasting from the free speech zone we call America, live on XM Satellite 167 or a terrestrial station near you. The phone number here is 866-55-77-377, toll-free from anywhere on the continent. Or, if you're shy, the email address is radicalruss@gmail.com. So, let's talk about our day-to-day survival here in George W. Bush's neocon America. And what are we going to do to restore our Constitution and to repair America's standing in the world? You and I, we can solve this together. Give me a call at 866-5577-377. Now, I know many of you, you're like me. You work a full-time job for a living, or on a week like this, you've got a vacation to go to, over the river and through the woods, to grandmother's house we go, etc., etc. So you don't always have time to catch up on the newspaper or the evening news. That's why, at the top of the Russ Belville Show, I help you catch up on the week's hottest news topics with...
The Week in 90 Seconds.
The Native Americans celebrate the 386th anniversary of the worst illegal immigrant problem ever. The Army thanks our wounded soldiers by demanding they return their enlistment signing bonuses.
A good man. We're going to get him some new legs.
Condi Rice invites the Palestinians and Israelis to peace talks in Annapolis.
What we've got here is... failure to communicate.
Our ally, Saudi Arabia, sentences a woman to 6 months and 200 lashes for her crime of being gang raped.
America will not pretend that jailed dissidents prefer their chains or that women welcome humiliation and servitude.
Scott McClellan's new book reveals that the chief executive may have made him lie about the outing of Valerie Plame.
If the person has violated law, the person will be taken care of.
Pakistan's dictator has declared martial law, sacked the Supreme Court, suspended the Constitution, and beaten and jailed his political opponents.
He's been a loyal ally in fighting terrorists. He's also advanced democracy in Pakistan.
Congress convenes for 30 seconds to prevent Chief Executive Bush from making recess appointments.
Yes, and I'd have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
The Supreme Court agrees to hear a landmark Second Amendment case about Washington, D.C.'s handgun ban.
Do you have any weapons, any guns?
The best, but we won't need them.
I'm glad to hear it. I want one anyway.
And oil hits $99 a barrel as Americans plan for holiday road trips and winter heating costs.
Oil, that is. Black gold. Texas tea.
Yes. So we got plenty to talk about here today, and this is live on Thanksgiving weekend here. But I am taking a vacation as well. This is kind of a working vacation for yours truly. I am broadcasting here from Nampa, Idaho. Yes, deep in the heart of Red State of America. That's right. Check out my Google Earth map on radicalrust.net on the internet. That'll give you the location for Nampa, Idaho, as well as the location of my callers each week. We can kind of show how we're pulling together all across the continent here to make a progressive change in our country. And you know, when I talk about my hometown a lot, Nampa, Idaho, I think it's kind of one of the most conservative places in the country. I used to run this map that I had on my website right after the 2004 election. And what it was is I would take the surveys from all the 50 states regarding President Bush's approval rating. And what we'd do is we'd take state by state the approval rating for Bush and subtract the disapproval rating for Bush. And that number would give you what I called the net approval rating. And so if you had more positive than negative, you know, more approval than disapproval, then that state was a red state that supports Bush. And if you had more disapproval than approval, then that state was a blue state that didn't like Bush. And the map would change. It would get blue and purple and red depending on what would happen. I mean, when Katrina happened, for example, the South kind of got a little bluer when they realized that they were on their own, that the government wasn't coming to help them. They turned a little bit bluer. And I mean, even Bush's home state of Texas would vary from time to time. It would go a little bit red and a little bit blue and hover around this neutral approval rating. And by these days now, we're starting to see just all around the country, that even some of the most Republican, conservative areas of the country have finally come around on the Cheney Burton maladministration and realized that these guys are Republicans in name only, that they have, you know, trashed the Republican Party. So we're starting to see a lot of places turn around, except the one I'm in right now. I gotta tell you, it's just amazing to me every time I come back to this state. You know, in that map that I made, one of the things you could count on is that Utah and Idaho would remain solidly red. Now, I haven't been able to update the map in quite a while because the website from which I got the survey information stopped putting out state-by-state survey information, but all through the two years, 2004 through 2006 that I had that map, Idaho and Utah never dipped below 5% positive approval for this guy. And that's net approval, right? So we're talking about 55% of the people in Idaho or Utah. That was the bare minimum that it would ever get down to. And from that point, oftentimes it was in 60 and 65% approval for President Bush, no matter what he did. I mean, Katrina and Abu Ghraib and all these terrible scandals that came out. And still, you know, Idaho and Utah clings stubbornly to this president. And this is the land I grew up in. This is the area I grew up in. And I feel that growing up in this kind of conservative atmosphere gives me a really good look at the way that conservative people think, the way that your red state people think. And I hope I can impart some of that wisdom out to everyone around here, around the country, around North America, to try to understand how these people think and how we can bring them around to our side. So, of course, I consider myself now the undercover liberal here in my home, in my hometown. When I crossed the state line, I stopped at a rest area and put four yellow support the troops ribbons magnets on the back of my car, you know, so I could fit in with everyone else driving around. Turns out that was like three too many. I literally passed a pickup truck that had seven support the troops ribbons on it. It was like they had the yellow one and the red, white, and blue one and the camouflage one. And boy, that guy really, really supports the troops, I suppose. You know, and it's just amazing every time. And, of course, when you come across, you know, I'm from Portland, Oregon, and so when you come across that Oregon state line, you got to set your clock ahead because of the time zone. You set your clock ahead 1 hour. But because I'm coming into Idaho, I set my calendar back 50 years. That's just about the way the politics work out here. But anyway, that's, you know, that's my hometown. I love it. There's a lot of stuff to love about Nampa, Idaho, but politics isn't one of those things. I hope everyone out there is having themselves a happy Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States. And I just wanted to go through and ask you folks what you are thankful for this Thanksgiving holiday. If you'd like to let us all know what you're thankful for, let's have some good news for once here in this political spectrum here. So give us a call at 866-5577-377. Tell me what you're thankful for this Thanksgiving holiday. I'll give you some starters. Here's some things that I'm thankful for. First of all, I'm thankful for the 22nd Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Yeah, I know I wasn't very happy about the 22nd Amendment. You know, that's the one that limits the president to having only two terms in office. I wasn't so happy about that amendment in 2000 when Bill Clinton was leaving office, and now I've seen the wisdom of the 22nd Amendment. Thank God we have a 22nd Amendment and we can't possibly have Bush for another term. I also am incredibly thankful, you know, being back here in Idaho, I'm incredibly thankful for my Idaho U.S. Senator Larry Craig. And, you know, without Larry Craig, there'd been a whole lot of sound clips that I wouldn't have been able to play. Larry's my buddy here.
Let me be clear.
Yes, Larry?
I am not gay.
Yes.
I never have been gay.
Well, I don't shit on any men. I'm not gay, and I don't cruise, and I don't hit on men.
Well, then that's all cleared up, isn't it? So, yes, big thanks to Senator Larry Craig for making a wonderful storyline for my show. Also, I want to have big thanks to my Thanksgiving. I'm really thankful for Brett Favre not hanging up the cleats and leading the Packers to their 10-1 record. I'm a big Packers fan. I'm also thankful for John Conyers, Dennis Kucinich, Russ Feingold, and a few of the other remaining true progressive Democrats who still put up a fight for our U.S. Constitution. I'm really thankful for them. I'm also thankful that the Bush administration has left us 1/10 of our Bill of Rights in this war on terror. Because as far as I know, we have not yet been called to quarter any British soldiers in our homes during this time of war. Yep, we still have the Third Amendment. Hooray! So let us know what you're thankful for here at 866-5577-377. When we come back from the break, we're going to take a look at some of the news stories. It's been kind of a slow news week with the whole Thanksgiving holiday coming up, but we got a few stories. We'll take a look at that issue of returning the signing bonuses, our troops being called on to return their signing bonuses if they get injured. And we'll also look at a case in Saudi Arabia that'll just make your hair curl. These are our allies. These are the people that are supposedly on our side. It's the Russ Belville Show. I'm Radical Russ, and we'll be right back. That's right, it's 21 after the hour, and we're fighting the power here at the Radical Russ radio program. The Russ Belville Show is live and direct here this Thanksgiving weekend, and you know, Chuck D is right. We need to fight the power, and part of fighting the power here is talking truth to power, is speaking up when issues need to be spoken up about. And one of the things that the Republicans, the right wing, has been very, very successful on, and the left side has been lacking on, is the idea of language and framing. And so I'd like to take a minute here and give the Democratic Party and liberals and progressives in general just a few ideas. You know, I'm a writer for a living, and I work on this radio show, work in the media, so language is very, very important to me, and I find that the Republicans understand this better than the Democrats do. One of our problems as progressives is we have this mistaken belief that the truth will set us free. If only we could educate all of the electorate about the disastrous policies of Republicans, if only we could show those people in the red states that they're voting against their own self-interests, if only they knew the truth, they'd vote with us. And that's just not so. The statistics prove it. People don't vote their own best interests. People vote their identity. And part of what gives people their identity is the language and the framing that is used to explain the issues to the people. And you've seen this with the Cheney-Burton maladministration, some of the things that they've come out with. They come out with a plan that'll cut down all the trees, and they call it the Healthy Forest Initiative. They come out with a plan that will let polluters pollute our skies, and they call it the Clear Skies Initiative. I mean, they're geniuses at this. They took tax relief. That was a big one that they made, right? Tax relief. As if taxes are some sort of infringement or burden or problem that you need to be relieved from, some affliction that you've had, some disease that needs to be cured. And so the person who comes in and relieves the taxes, they're the hero. So I want to give the Democrats a few framing ideas to think about. Whenever a Republican comes up and talks about tax relief, I want to hear Democrats talking about tax responsibility. You know, Americans believe in fairness and responsibility and shared sacrifice. They just don't see it at the macro level. They don't see it at the governmental level. And if we can start talking about corporations shirking their tax responsibility, rather than letting them frame it as tax relief, we might get somewhere on the issue of progressive taxation. Or take the inheritance tax, for example. When the inheritance tax that affects only the richest 1% there that have to try to bequeath their goods to their kin after they die, everybody loved the inheritance tax. The Republicans turned that into the death tax. Oh no, the death tax. That's terrible. They tax you when you die. Democrats, turn that around. Turn it around and call it the wealth tax, right? Because most people will understand if you call it the wealth tax, and you'll get more support for that. And what brought me into this language and framing debate is I went out and I purchased the DVD for Michael Moore's movie Sicko, and he's got a bunch of extra cuts on the DVD, and I, you know, totally recommend that you go out and get that DVD. And in one segment, he's interviewing this guy named Tony Benn, and he was a member of the British Parliament for 51 years and ran as a socialist and didn't hide his socialist values either. And he makes this very, very interesting observation that I think deserves a listen. This is Tony Benn from the Sicko DVD.
The word customer is a very interesting word. It comes into all the language now. And I was on a train the other day, and the ticket collector said, customers who boarded the train look after their tickets. And I said, I'm not a customer, I'm a passenger. Oh, no, he said, he looked in the book, you're a customer. So I said, well, if I go to help for my operation, to a hospital for operation, am I a patient or a customer? Well, the book didn't advise him on that. But the thing about a customer is, if you haven't any money, you can't be a customer. So the word customer dehumanizes the poor.
It's interesting how the words we choose frame the debate. If you call someone a customer, then they can't be a customer if they're poor. And there's so many words that are like that that we need to turn around. We need to think of language as important. And one word that I think we really need to turn around is this so-called concept of electability. We hear this all the time. You hear people, you know, especially when I'm living in Portland, you know, we've got a lot of lefties out there, and I'll hear people say, well, I really support Dennis Kucinich. I really like what Dennis Kucinich is saying, but he's not electable. Or, you know, they'll say, you know, whatever candidate, pick a candidate. You know, they'll say John McCain, well, he's not electable. He's too old. Or Hillary Clinton, she's not electable. She's too polarizing. And I was reading a friend of mine off on email. He sent me this little note, and he makes this very good point. If you qualify for the ballot, you're electable. That's democracy. If Dennis Kucinich and Hillary Clinton are both on the ballot, they are equally electable before the law, the people, and God. To say otherwise is to diminish the importance of our vote, and that's just the opening that tyranny needs. We've been convinced that people aren't electable as if these are some sort of product, right? As if we have to choose Coke or Pepsi, that it's an either-or choice. And the only person who defines electable is the opponent. It's the opponent of Hillary Clinton that's going to say she's not electable. It's the opponent of Dennis Kucinich who's going to say that they're not electable. Have we been trained to believe that our vote is meaningless if the person we vote for loses? That's how they're going to defeat democracy. We degrade the vote. We get people to not value their vote, to think that their vote is wasted if they choose what they really want. It depresses the turnout. We try to fool the corporations and these lobbyists try to fool us with this idea that we have to be realistic. Make the realistic choice. You got to pick Hillary or Giuliani because the other choices just aren't realistic. Well, I don't believe that, and I think you probably don't believe that either. So think about the framing and the language you use, and when we come back from our news break here, we're going to get into some of the news stories as well. Coming back for the news, we're going to talk about the upcoming war on Christmas, as well as that D.C. gun rights case. There's going to be a big Second Amendment case that the Supreme Court is hearing that should make a big statement as far as gun rights in this country. You might have some interesting disagreements with me on that one. My position might surprise you. So this is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. You can call us at 866-5577-377 or send an email, radicalruss@gmail.com. We'll be right back after the news break. A story that I picked up on a lot of the news blogs out there. It's been being talked about a whole bunch on all the different stations as well. And this has to do with our soldiers out there in Iraq. And, you know, many of our soldiers are signing up now with the Army because it's kind of the employer of last resort in a lot of cases. You know, the economy's down. It's hard to get jobs. And so sometimes a lot of people will sign up for the Guard, the Reserve, or the active duty, you know, because it's the only place they can find employment sometimes. And one of the things that lures people into signing up for the military are these signing bonuses. Now, the signing bonuses have always been around to try to get soldiers to enlist, but recently these signing bonuses have been greatly increased because they're having such trouble getting people to enlist for the war. And the occupation, I should say. So they've been giving $20,000, $30,000 signing bonuses to some of these soldiers. Now, the troubling part of this story comes from a TV station out in Pittsburgh, I believe it was, that had this story about a soldier named Jordan Fox. And Jordan Fox was seriously injured when a roadside bomb blew up his vehicle. He was knocked unconscious, his back was injured, and he lost all vision in his right eye. So, of course, he'd been injured on the battlefield, so a few months later he was sent home. His injuries prohibited him from fulfilling 3 months of his commitment. Okay, so he signed up for the military, and I don't have the details on how long he signed up for, but the typical enlistment can be for 2 years if this was active duty. And so out of his commitment that he originally signed for, he wasn't going to be able to fulfill the last 3 months of the commitment. So a few days ago, Jordan Fox, one of our soldiers, one of our fighting men, one of the troops that the Republicans keep telling me I'm supposed to be supporting, he got a letter from the military demanding nearly $3,000 of his signing bonus back. Think about that. Our soldiers being injured out in the field, if they can't fulfill their whole term, the military wants them to pay back part of their signing bonus. Too bad for you. You shouldn't have gone out and gotten injured. Is that the message we're trying to say here to the troops here? Yeah, we'll give you $20,000 to go fight, but if you happen to get blown up, you got to pay some of that back. This is the way the Republicans treat our troops. And I hope this is sinking in, especially if I've got any of my red state family listening to this broadcast today. I hope this is sinking into you that this is your Republican Party. This is your support the troops party that's trying to get them to pay back their bonuses. I mean, these are not NFL running backs that should lose their contract money if they blow out a knee, right? These are soldiers who pledge their lives to defend this country. And the least we can do is let them keep their signing bonuses. So this story broke early this week, and of course the Pentagon scrambled to try to cover this, to try to spin this. And on Fox News, of course, one of their spokesmen came out. This was a Brigadier General Michael Tucker from the Pentagon, who announced that the Pentagon was reversing course and would not force Jordan to repay the bonus. Quote, "It does not pass the common sense test," end quote. Well, the question I would have is, why did they even do it in the first place? It's nice that they reversed the situation, but who was the bright bulb out there who came up with the idea of making them pay back the bonus in the first place? I mean, this is insane. And Jordan's not the only one. Jordan Fox ended up going up on all these different cable news shows, and he was saying this is just the beginning. He's heard many stories from many other soldiers who've had this happen to them as well, with the government coming back and demanding that they repay part of their signing bonus. And so it's great that the Pentagon reversed course on this, but this story now is kind of fading away without people realizing another portion of the situation here. Representative Jason Altmaier is a Democrat from Pennsylvania, and he's written this bill called the Veterans Guaranteed Bonus Act. And he wrote this to prevent the Defense Department from penalizing wounded soldiers, right? So he was trying to, you know, he knew this was going on, this Jason Altmaier. And Representative Altmaier wrote this bill that would codify into law that once guaranteed this bonus to someone, that they would get their bonus, you know, despite the fact of them getting injured. You know, in the NFL, they call this a guaranteed bonus, you know, guaranteed signing bonus. Even if the quarterback gets injured, he still gets his money. I mean, if it's good enough for an NFL quarterback or running back, why wouldn't it be good enough for our soldiers? That's what I want to know. But Jason Altmaier, this representative, did make a very good point after this Pentagon guy said they'd reversed course. He says, however, I am disappointed that the policy does not go further by stating that wounded soldiers will also receive the remaining balance of future bonus payments. So that's kind of the trick that the Pentagon's pulling here, is they're coming out with the spin to say, okay, if the guy's already received a bonus, we won't ask for any of it back. But meanwhile, they're silent on the issue of the fact that they won't pay out the future bonuses if they've been time delayed or prorated, that they won't get their full bonus. So you sign up for $20,000, you know, you go to Iraq, you get your leg blown off, you come back, and if you have what you haven't already received, you're never going to get, right? So they managed to kind of pull the wool over our eyes this way. So another Thanksgiving shout out goes out to Representative Altmaier of Pennsylvania, who's pointing this out, and I need you to get on the phone and talk to your congressional representatives about this. This is important. Republican, Democrat, Independent, it doesn't matter. We're talking about our troops here. And the least we can do is support our troops and fulfill our commitments and our promises to the troops. So that number for Congress, let me give you the congressional phone number here if you haven't got it down. The congressional number for Congress is 202-225-3121. That's 202-225-3121. 225 3121. And when you call that number, they're going to answer and ask what zip code you're from, and they'll connect you with your representative or senator, and just tell them to support Representative Altmaier's Veterans Guaranteed Bonus Act. I mean, this should be a no-brainer, folks. This should be one of those plans that gets bipartisan support, and who knows if we, you know, even if Bush vetoes it, it should be something that we could get past a Bush veto, I would think. You know, support the troops. They're always saying support the troops. So when we come back from our next break, we're going to keep talking a little bit about what's going on in Iraq and how our troops are doing. Also, it's time for that war on Christmas again. Bill O'Reilly's talking about his war on Christmas. We'll have some audio on that. And as usual, at the top of the next hour, we'll have our Lunatic Fringe Award with the craziest statements made by right-wingers this week, and a look at Pakistan as well as the gun rights battle in Washington, D.C. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State Refugee, live and direct on this Thanksgiving weekend. What do you got thanks for? What do you want to give thanks for this? Talk about grammar. What do you want to give thanks for this Thanksgiving holiday? You got to think of something positive going on. That's the only way we're going to make it through these last 400 some odd days of the Cheney-Burton maladministration. If you got something you want to give thanks for and let all of North America know about it, give me a call at 866-5577-377 or send an email at radicalruss@gmail.com. And there's another thing I want to mention that I'm thankful for, and maybe this will surprise the righties out there listening, but I am thankful for the reduction in deaths of our troops. Yes, checking out the website, iCasualties.org, iCasualties.org, which keeps a coalition casualty count. And back in October, the previous month, we only had, shouldn't say only, but we had 38 coalition troops, 38 American troops, I should say, who perished in Iraq in the month of October. And this month so far, we've had 31 of our American soldiers and servicemen who've perished in Iraq. And this is good news. You know, this is great news. We don't want our soldiers passing away. I mean, that's why those of us on the progressive side want to bring them home. One more dead soldier is one more too many. But when we were facing this, the beginning of the year, during the surge and facing 80 to 100 to 120 deaths per month, then having less than 40 deaths per month, that's definitely something to be thankful for. But, progressive, do not let the righties try to convince you that this means that the war plan is working, that they're having some measure of success in this war plan. First of all, I mean, we invaded to get rid of weapons of mass destruction in Saddam Hussein, and that mission's been accomplished. That was accomplished back in May of 03. So the other so-called goal that we had here in Iraq was to reduce the violence in Iraq so that the political factions could get together in their government and form some sort of power-sharing agreement. And that has not happened. We've done our job. Our American troops have done our job. They've reduced the violence in Iraq. We're having less of our soldiers die, and still the Iraqi government cannot get its stuff together. So it's more than past time to get our soldiers out of Iraq, but it's still good news that these soldiers are passing away at a rate less than the first part of this year. But let's examine the reasons for that, of course. Part of the reasons why we have less of our soldiers passing away have to do with the fact that we're finally getting them some armor and some of these MRAPs, those mine-resistant vehicles. Had we had those vehicles in the first couple of years, perhaps we wouldn't be up to 3,875 troops that have passed away in this occupation, this illegal occupation of the Middle East. And also we're finding that a lot of the militias, the Sadr Brigade, the Mahdi militia, has been asked to stand down by Muqtada al-Sadr. And the neighborhoods in Baghdad have been ethnically cleansed to the point where they're separated into Sunni and Shiite enclaves and have no reason to be fighting each other as much as before. So it's all smoke and mirrors. Don't let them fool you with the casualty counts. Remember that the casualty counts we're experiencing now are just about equal to the casualty counts we were experiencing in the first year of this war. So bringing it down to just where we used to be after a surge that brought us up to three times that level is not exactly a measure of a success. It's a measure of getting, well, back where we started, like the Kinks saying at the beginning of the segment. All right, so when we come back from our next break, we're going to talk about Bill O'Reilly and the war on Christmas. Yes, the war on Christmas is still progressing, and, well, progressives, we're not doing enough to kill Christmas. You and I, we need to do more. It's not, to have them say happy holidays isn't quite cutting it. We need to do something more so we can finally eliminate Christmas. And for those of you who don't understand sarcasm, well, too bad for you. We'll be right back after a few minutes. This is the Russ Belville Show. Welcome back. It's 54 after the hour. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, and it's the holiday season again.
Tis the season. As you know, if you've read my book, Culture Warrior, many secular progressives despise Christmas, want to wipe it out in America.
It's Santa Claus. Get him. Yeah, it's time for the war on Christmas, progressives. Suit up. Get your Rambo knives and your Kevlar on. It's time for that war on Christmas. You know, every year O'Reilly comes out with this so-called culture war because stores want their employees to say happy holidays and call it a holiday tree rather than a Christmas tree. God forbid we be inclusive of people with other religions and people who have other holidays. We can't have that. Everybody has to bow down to the Christian supremacy in this country and declare that Christmas is superior to all other holidays. And, you know, I've just had enough of this war on Christmas junk. It's just, it's just another one of those wedge issues to try to separate us. I mean, come on. Nobody on the progressive side is thinking about a war on Christmas. I mean, every progressive I know celebrates Christmas and has the holidays and the wreaths and all that. All we're asking is that our government doesn't overtly use religion in any sort of holiday display. Remember the whole First Amendment, you know, shall not respect an establishment of religion. Yeah, you remember that part. So anyway, I was looking through some of the Christmas presents that are available, and I caught this one, and I don't know who you'd give this to, but I thought it was cute. This is a Donald Rumsfeld doll, or as we called him as a kid, action figure. But the Donald Rumsfeld doll, it's available at talkingpresidents.com for $19.95. And when you pull the string on this Rumsfeld doll, it spouts, you know, Rumsfeldisms, little things he used to say, you know, things like this.
As you know, you go to war with the army you have, not the army you might want or wish to have at a later time.
Yeah, so you get that doll, get all the famous Rumsfeld quotes. It's a lot of fun. Now, appropriately, the doll is made in China. You know, if it's a Bush thing, it's got to be made in China. So you want to keep it away from the kids. I mean, who knows what kind of paint or glue they've been using on that thing. I mean, you know those Aquadot toys, right, that got recalled last week because it turned out if the kids ate them, their body chemistry would turn it into roofies? Yeah, the GHB drug, the date rape drug, yeah. Yeah, so that's those Chinese toys out there. There's your war on Christmas right there. So I wonder what kind of glue they're using on the Rumsfeld doll. Well, it's probably LSD, because you'd have to be tripping to understand what he's saying sometimes.
If I know the answer, I'll tell you the answer, and if I don't, I'll just respond cleverly.
But the message is that there are known knowns. There are things we know that we know. There are known unknowns. That is to say, there are things that we now know we don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. There are things we do not know we don't know. And each year we discover a few more of those unknown unknowns.
Yeah, I think one of those unknown unknowns is, who the heck am I going to buy a Donald Rumsfeld doll for? But that's the story. The Donald Rumsfeld doll's out at talkingpresidents.com. If you want to get yourself one, well, I don't know. I'm not going to recommend it necessarily since it's a Chinese-made thing, but there's the news. News you can use. You decide what you want to do with it. We'll come back for the second hour here of the Russ Belville Show. We're going to talk about this case. The Supreme Court has agreed to take a case on Washington, D.C.'s ban of handguns. This case could be a landmark case with regards to Second Amendment law in this country, and asks the question, do the people have an individual right to own and keep firearms in their homes? And do the states have the right to ban a certain type of weapon. I want to know what you think about that as well. The phone number here is 866-5577-377. This is Radical Russ beaming at you live and direct from Nampa, Idaho on this Thanksgiving weekend. We'll have us a little talk about gun control and firearms in America coming right up after the news here at News and Traffic and whatever else at the top of the hour. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. Hello, North America, and welcome to Thanksgiving weekend. We're live broadcasting here from deep in the heart of Red State America, my hometown of Nampa, Idaho. Yeah, I'm on the road this week visiting my folks here in beautiful Nampa, Idaho. We're broadcasting from the free speech zone we call America, live on XM Satellite 167 or a terrestrial station near you. The phone number here is 866-5577-377. Toll free from anywhere on the continent. Or, if you're shy, the email address is radicalrus@gmail.com. So let's talk about our day-to-day survival in George W. Bush's neocon America and what we're going to do to restore our Constitution and repair America's standing in the world. And one of the things in the Constitution, one of the most controversial, let's say, amendments in the Constitution, the one that causes maybe the most fights between people, is that Second Amendment to the Constitution. Now, the Second Amendment reads, quote, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed," end quote. What does that amendment mean to you? Does that amendment mean that American citizens are allowed to keep any gun they want in their home? Or does that mean that the state has the right to restrict the ownership of guns to those that are that would be used in a well-regulated militia? There's been arguments about this for time, well, ever since the beginning of our country, and there's a lot of points on this that I want to talk about. You know, I grew up here in Nampa, Idaho, and all of my uncles and cousins, all the males in my family, and a lot of the females too, are avid hunters, and so I grew up around guns. I grew up with my grandfather having a gun cabinet with, you know, 8 or 9 different rifles and shotguns and even a couple of handguns in that gun cabinet. And me and the rest of my cousins, my young cousins, used to play around and we were all taught, you know, don't touch the gun cabinet, stay away from the gun cabinet. It was always locked. The guns were always disassembled and never loaded, but we were always taught that they were loaded. We were always taught that every gun should be treated like it's loaded. And so I found that when I moved to Portland, Oregon, and I was dealing with a lot more of a progressive atmosphere and a lot more liberals out there, that my views on guns seemed to be a little bit in conflict with a lot of the people that are supposedly on my side of the political spectrum. I actually like guns. I think that people should have guns. I think this is, you know, when the Constitution, the whole point of our country, you know, when we go back to the Declaration and the Constitution, and one of our founding documents talk about that we have our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And part of life and liberty are protecting one's life and liberty. We can't always depend on the police departments to be there in time, and our military to be there in time. It's up to Americans to defend themselves. On the other hand, there's a whole lot of difference between defending yourself and arming yourself to the teeth with some sort of big stockpile of assault weapons, right? There's a huge difference here. And I think another one of the problems that conflates this issue is the fact that it's kind of a different issue when we're talking about rural areas versus urban areas. I mean, if we go back in history to the days of the castles and the keeps and the Middle Ages and such, even they made people check their weapons when they came into the city gates, right? So when we're talking about gun issues in the country, you know, that's a whole different issue. If you live, you know, 50 miles away from the nearest town and, you know, an hour away from a sheriff coming to your home, then it's up to you to defend your property if criminals want to break in and harm you. On the other hand, if you live in the middle of a city and the police are only minutes away, does that make a difference? Does that change how we should deal with the rights of people to own weapons? Well, the reason this issue is in the news right now has to do with an appeals court case in the District of Columbia. There was a city ordinance that was passed in 1976 in Washington, D.C., that said that residents can keep shotguns or hunting rifles at their homes, and the weapons had to be disassembled and have trigger locks, but handguns are illegal, except for police officers. And so six residents of Washington, D.C. challenged this ordinance as unconstitutional. And so what has happened here is an appeals court took this up, and they declared that that ban was against the Second Amendment, that that law was against the Second Amendment. And this is being appealed down. The Supreme Court has decided to take up this issue. Now, both sides have their case to make. The lawyers for the District of Columbia, who are supporting this ban on handguns, argue that the words and history of the amendment show it was concerned with state militias, not individuals with guns. For example, they say that the term, you know, to bear arms is a military term, and that the amendment doesn't protect a right to own gun for purely private uses. On the other hand, the folks at the National Rifle Association and other constitutional scholars are saying that the right to keep and bear arms was intended, the intent of the law, was to protect the rights of individual Americans to defend themselves. And I always respond to this when I'm talking to people about issues of gun control and such, when they say, you know, we should have the right to bear arms. The Constitution says we have the right to bear arms. And then I turn and I say, okay, so which well-regulated state militia do you belong to? On the other hand, people who are for the gun bans will say, we have a regulated state militia. It's called the National Guard. But I was in the National Guard. And when you're in the National Guard, they will issue you a weapon. And when you're done with that weapon, you have to turn it back in to the National Guard. If the Constitution had meant to say the militia's right to keep and bear arms, they'd have written it that way. But they wrote the people's right to keep and bear arms. So where does this break down? How are we going to deal with the issue of guns in this country? Does the Second Amendment protect an individual right to own a gun, regardless of your membership in a well-regulated state militia? The way I'd like to see this break down, I'd like to see a compromise between these two sides, okay? I would like to see the National Rifle Association and the people who support gun rights to at least make the compromise that things like assault weapons, you know, that are firing hundreds of bullets a second or a minute, whatever, that we can at least agree that those aren't to be held by private individuals without some severe, you know, serious oversight and regulation. And with handguns, something similar as well. You know, I always talk to people about that. They say, oh, I want to keep a handgun in the house in case there's a home invasion robbery or some bad guy comes into the home. Okay, I can see that point, but why not keep a shotgun? You know, I can tell you that sound of that shotgun, that sound of a shotgun, is going to scare away a burglar a lot quicker than you trying to reach into the drawer and pull out a handgun from the desk. And of course, there's all the statistics that all the statistics that people bring up about you know, people that have handguns, they're more likely to be killed by the handgun in their home, and there's more likely to be accidents, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really a tough, thorny issue, and I think, you know, we shy away from this issue because it's so contentious and so controversial, but I think it's something we need to discuss. And this case here, coming before the Supreme Court, is going to make a huge difference here. In March, the judge who reviewed this case and overturned the ban in D.C. said, it does not make sense to view the Second Amendment as a protection for states. Here's his quote. The Bill of Rights was almost entirely a declaration of individual rights, which is true. First Amendment and all the other rights are pretty much individual rights. And the Second Amendment's inclusion there strongly indicates that it, too, was intended to protect personal liberty. So part of his argument here is context, that since the Second Amendment was in the context of all the other Bill of Rights amendments that they had to do with individual rights, that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right. On the other hand, if the Founding Fathers had meant that, why did they add that part about a well-regulated state militia? So the compromise I propose is this. Anybody who wants to own a gun, handgun, you know, rifle, whatever, anybody who wants to own a gun has to join a well-regulated state militia. Not the National Guard, but a new thing that we could invent called the well-regulated state militia. And all I'd have people do is they'd have to register with the well-regulated state militia, show up once a month for drills at the regulated state militia, and pass some sort of minimum competency with safety and gun ownership and marksmanship. Is that too much to ask? I mean, we've got more registration and rules and testing for people to get their driver's license than we do for people to get a firearm in this country. So is that too much to ask that we have some sort of quote-unquote well-regulated militia, something a little less than the National Guard, where we could keep, you know, some tab on what's going on with people and their ownership of guns? That's all I'm asking, some sort of compromise here. But I want to know what you think as well. Maybe you've got a different opinion on this. The phone number here is 866-55-77-377, or you can give me an email, radicalruss@gmail.com. So we'll look at this gun rights issue. And also, coming up later in the show, we're going to look at Pervez Musharraf and the situation in Pakistan, as well as this disgusting case out of Saudi Arabia, our allies, supposed allies of Saudi Arabia. You want to talk about respecting women's rights, you're not going to be talking about Saudi Arabia. So come on back after the break. This is Russ Belville and the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. Welcome back to Thanksgiving weekend. It's 21 after the hour, and we're broadcasting live here from deep in red state America. I'm coming at you from my hometown of Nampa, Idaho. I'm on the road visiting my parents here in red state America, and coming at you on the XM Satellite Network. Our phone number here is 866-5577-377. And the question today here is, what do you think this means? A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Does that mean people get to have handguns? Does that mean people get to have assault rifles? Or does that mean that people should have to be in the National Guard to have handguns or assault rifles? Well, that's the case that the Supreme Court's going to be taking up this term. The D.C. Appellate Court has struck down a ban on handguns in Washington, D.C. that dates back to 1976. And the Supreme Court has agreed to hear this case on behalf of six city residents who have filed the appeal. And we're going to be finding out just exactly what does the Second Amendment mean. Does it mean that individuals have a right to bear arms? Or does it mean that states have the right to control how people keep and bear arms? It's an interesting discussion. And one of the things that always cracks me up about this discussion is how a lot of the people, you know, I grew up here in Red State, Idaho, and how there's this kind of underlying paranoia about the government. You know, there was always talk about, during the Clinton administration here in Idaho, there was always talk about the black helicopters and how Clinton was going to sell us out to the UN and all these, you know, crazy paranoid conspiracy theories. So here in my home state, a lot of the conservative people have this undercurrent of distrust of the government. And one of the things that they'll always bring up with regards to the gun control argument is, I don't want the government controlling our guns or knowing who has the guns. They'll round us all up, and they'll round up all the people that have the guns. You know, they're afraid of getting on some sort of list. And these are the same people who unquestioningly support President Bush when he warrantlessly wiretaps all of America, you know, through Verizon and all these telecom companies. You know, they worry about the government having some sort of list of gun owners, but yet they don't seem to be that concerned about the government wiretapping the entire country without a warrant. It's the crazy dichotomy of right-wing thinking, you know. It's that same kind of attitude that the people who are all scared about the immigrants coming to take our jobs. And yet, 20 years ago, those were the people that were bashing unions. Yeah, it's that same kind of, you know, cognitive dissonance, if you will. So if you've got an opinion on that gun rights issue, the phone number here is 866-55-77-377. You can let all of North America know how you feel about the issue. Or if you just have something you're thankful for on this Thanksgiving weekend, give us a call anyway, and we'll talk about Thanksgiving. Again, the phone number is 866-557-7377. But at this time, we need to turn to one of our regular segments.
The lunatic is on the grass.
Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the grass.
From the Guano Loco neocon chickenhawks to the hypocritical American Taliban. And the cable news punditocracy. The Russ Belville Show presents
the
Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. And we start off with Hardball, the TV show, the talking head show, political show on MSNBC. Hardball's Chris Matthews. He was discussing the problem Democrats have with the media in terms of how Al Gore and John Kerry were both smeared with falsehoods in the press. Then Matthews goes on to defend Kerry about the Swift boat attacks, but then repeats the same debunked smears that the right wing used against Al Gore.
But in terms of Al Gore, he's the one who said he created the internet. He's the one who put out the word that he was the subject or the role model for Love Story, that he pointed the country's attention to Love Canal. He stuck himself into that story.
Let's debunk this once and for all. First of all, Al Gore never said he invented the internet. During a 1999 interview on CNN, he said, quote, "During my service in the United States Congress, I took the initiative in creating the Internet." And then somebody no less than Newt Gingrich, the former House Speaker, a guy who's not really much of a Gore supporter, Newt Gingrich said, quote, "Gore is the person who in the Congress most systematically worked to make sure that we got an Internet." That was Newt Gingrich.
Whoa, she turned me into a newt.
Yes, Newt Gingrich, who even agrees that Al Gore had taken the initiative leading to the internet. And that story about, you know, being the subject of Love Story, well, that was an interview that Eric Segal gave to the Tennessean, where it was the writer who said he used Gore as a model. Gore never said that. And this thing about Love Canal, that was when Al Gore had pointed out that he had done a case like that in Tennessee earlier than Love Canal, and then that was one that people hadn't heard of. So bad on you, Chris Matthews, for repeating the right-wing smears and talking points that have long ago been debunked. But even that's not our winner today. Our other contestant here in the Lunatic Fringe Award, has to do with a comment that I brought up in last week's Lunatic Fringe. You remember this from the South Carolina meeting where John McCain was taking questions from voters, and this was one of the voters' questions.
How do we beat the bitch?
So on CNN, Politico's Mike Allen had this to say about the Hillary Clinton "how do we beat the bitch" comment.
But what Republican voter hasn't thought that? What voter in general hasn't thought that?
Well, I haven't. I've never thought of Hillary Clinton as a bitch. I mean, a triangulating Republican-like corporate centrist D.C. insider in a pantsuit, maybe, but not a bitch. But our winner, of course, goes to Ann Coulter Light, otherwise known as Kellyanne Conway on Fox News. Here's where she was explaining how the war on English is going to lead to disaster.
And in fact, what starts out as maybe the person who doesn't speak English putting mayonnaise instead of mustard as you requested on your sandwich is one day going to blossom into two air traffic controllers who don't speak great English because political correctness has made us appoint them to those positions. They're going to have two planes crashing in the sky, and that's not a dramatic example.
So Kellyanne Conway for displaying the hysterical exaggerations of Condi Rice and the bleach blonde looks of Ann Coulter. You're the winner of this week's Lunatic Fringe Award. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We got your calls coming up right after the break. Luke in Missoula's holding on the line. We'll get right to that after this short break, talking about gun control and the Second Amendment. This is the Russ Belville Show. You can call in at 866-5577-377.
More control in the cities and less control in the countries is a good idea.
So are we going to say then that this whole Second Amendment issue is more an issue of the states being able to determine how they're going to control the guns, like perhaps in Montana, where we've got a lot of, you know, rural country, that there'd be more liberal gun laws than, say, Los Angeles County?
Exactly. I think that makes perfect sense.
Okay, well, I thank you for your opinion on that, Luke. And if Nampa, just to go off the sidetrack here, Nampa, Idaho, huh? Class of 85, Nampa High School. So glad to have you on the line.
76, Nampa High.
All right, go Bulldogs! You realize
born in Mercy Hospital.
Oh, me too, Mercy Hospital. Yeah, quite amazing. They've got three high schools in this town now. They've gone from when I was growing up here, it was like 20,000 people. Now they're up to like 80,000. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. My mother-in-law lives out there off of 12th Avenue, that Sunbridge area.
Yeah.
So we're down there all the time. But
All right. Well, keep yourself well and alive, and happy Thanksgiving weekend to everybody out there in the Montana area. Beautiful, beautiful country. I was just up in around Gallatin Gateway a couple months ago, and just beautiful. So thank you for your call. I totally appreciate that. Let's go to South Carolina. We've got Tom in South Carolina. Tom, welcome to the Russ Melville Show.
Hey, how's it going?
It is excellent.
I'm just calling to point out, I often hear people who are pro-guns, and they offer the Second Amendment as though it's an absolute guarantee to have any sort of weapon under any sort of condition. And I would just point out that the amendment, the wording of the amendment doesn't specify guns. It simply says arms. So unless you're willing to sort of allow someone to wear a suicide bomber's vest into the gallery of Congress, you've already sort of decided that there are certain boundaries that have to be drawn. And once you get someone to acknowledge that, then the rest is just sort of shades of gray and parsing the finer points. But the suggestion that sort of the, you know, that you can just bring up the Second Amendment and the conversation has to stop there is just ludicrous.
Right. It was the same ludicrous point that, you know, you can't bring up the First Amendment to defend your right to say fire in a crowded movie house. Same kind of idea. They're not absolute, you know. We have to have some sort of common sense limits on these things. And one of the things I like to bring up to this is the point, you know, when they say, you know, we have the right to keep and bear arms, and I always say, well, which well-regulated state militia do you belong to?
Exactly right. I mean, I'm not sure I agree with you in the that it's practical to sort of come up with a body called the well-regulated state militia, but clearly there has to be some degree to which that there are boundaries and limits. Otherwise, as I say, anybody can have any weapon anywhere, and that's preposterous.
Right, and I think part of this too, it would be, you know, to intelligently look at the context of the amendment and to think about these guys in the late 1700s and what they would have considered arms and what they would have considered a militia. You know, they couldn't have possibly seen ahead to assault rifles and, you know, AK-47s and Tech-9 pistols and all of that. So, you know, they were thinking muskets, you know. So, yeah, thank you for your comment, Tom. If you had something else to say, go ahead.
No, that's it.
Okay, well, thank you, Tom. Totally appreciate the call from South Carolina, and great to have you on the line there. Definitely appreciate that. If you've got an opinion here on this Washington, D.C. Court case where they're going to be reviewing the gun ban in Washington, D.C., the handgun ban, the phone number here is 866-5577-377, or you can email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Yeah, it's a thorny issue because there's a part of me, you know, having grown up here with hunters and, you know, I've always comfortable around guns. I was in the National Guard, you know, marksman, qualified marksman, all of that. I've fired the M60 machine gun. And there's some of these weapons that just do not belong in the hands of civilians, just the way I see it. You know, there's no reason that anyone needs to own an M60 machine gun or a light anti-tank rocket. And so I think Tom's got a good point here in that the right to bear arms is not a limitless right. If you're going to say that you have the right to bear AK-47s or handguns, then you're saying that arms could consist of just about any sort of weaponry. And like he said, you know, are we going to let that go to suicide bomber vests? Are we going to let that go to mines and other sorts of arms? And I don't think we're going to go that direction. As far as the ban on handguns, that's, you know, that's another thorny issue. I kind of like the idea of handguns if we had something like the Old West where you had to show that you had a handgun, right? You had to wear it on a holster and everyone could see that you had it. Of course, that's kind of a silly thought because it opens up all sorts of problems with people, you know, stealing your weapon or whatever. But as far as someone keeping a handgun in their home, you know, I'm pretty protective of that idea of the home is your castle. And when we look at the other amendments to the Constitution, when we look at the Fourth Amendment, where we have the right to be secure in our persons, papers, houses, and effects, you know, I think the founders had a good idea here as far as, you know, a man's home being his castle and being able to protect the people that he loves and his property. And so I do support that, absolutely. I just don't see why you need a handgun in your house when a shotgun will probably do you a whole lot better. You know, that sound from the shotgun and you don't have to aim it that much, you know. That's going to have a lot more of a deterrent effect, I think, on a potential thief than trying to fumble a handgun out of a nightstand or something like that and get it loaded and all. Well, if you have any comments on that, again, give us a call at 866-5577-377. You can call in on that story, but I also want to move on. We're running out of time here, so I want to run on to another story that's just, well, it's just despicable is what it is. Our allies, you remember our allies, Saudi Arabia, you know, our good friends in the oil kingdom, you know, those guys that, 15 of the 19 9/11 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. Well, there's this case coming out of Saudi Arabia about a woman who was gang raped. She was gang raped in Saudi Arabia. And what had happened is she had gone to visit a friend, a male friend, to pick up some photographs. And first of all, that's illegal in Saudi Arabia. A woman is not allowed to visit an unmarried male relative unless she brings a male relative with her. Isn't that pretty sick? So when we get to the later part of this show, we'll talk about that in the last couple of segments about this Saudi Arabian gang rape case. But I want to go back to the phones real quick here to Illinois. I've got Zach in Illinois hanging on the line. Zach, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing excellent. I hope you're having a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah. It's been quite busy. I work in retail, so it's definitely...
Oh, Black Friday for you.
Absolutely. Actually, I'm headed to work right now, so... Yeah.
So what do you got about the gun issue?
Okay, actually, I mean, I'm not a gun owner. I just turned 21. I'm not really a hunter. I don't really come from a hunting family. I come from a more conservative family. My ideals and philosophy is definitely more liberal. But as far as the gun issue goes, I think we need the least amount of gun control as possible. I think all that gun control is really doing is it's taking that right away from the people who should have guns, and it's giving the criminals more free access to guns, and it's giving, you know, more gun control is giving people less of the right to defend themselves. Personally, like I said, I'm afraid of guns. But I think, you know, once you start taking away people's guns, like what the UN wants to do, you know, I just think it's ridiculous.
The UN wanting to take our guns is kind of a right-wing talking point that's being debunked. I don't have the time to attack it right now, but I mean, I'm curious, Zach, are you from more the center Illinois, kind of the rural areas, or are you more in a city like Chicago or Springfield or something?
I'm actually from the suburbs of Chicago, so.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's that. You know, I've heard that point a lot, and I want to talk about that. I've got to take a break right now, so thank you for your call. I'm going to have to go to break here and pay some of the bills. But when we come back from break, we'll talk about that attitude, as well as, again, this Saudi gang rape case. I can't let this one drop. So this is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. Visiting my parents for the Thanksgiving holiday. And before I get to the bad news, let me get to some good news here for the day. This is great to hear. This just came over the wires here on thinkprogress.org, one of the blogs that I track quite a bit. And the title here is Conservative Australian Prime Minister John Howard, who has been one of President Bush's staunchest allies, suffered a humiliating defeat in the national elections. Yes, in Australia, Saturday, when the opposition Labor Party wrested control from Parliament away from Howard by a 53% to 46% margin. So, once again, the albatross that is George W. Bush bringing down another conservative politician. It couldn't happen too soon as far as I'm concerned. But I also wanted to talk about this case in Saudi Arabia. There was this woman who was 19 years old, and she got sentenced. She was gang raped, first of all. Let me explain this. The woman was gang raped by seven men. Okay, seven men gang raped this woman. And the Saudi court sentenced her, the woman who got raped, to 90 lashes, you know, whip, you know, with a whip, right? 90 lashes and something like 9 months in, or 6 months, I'm sorry, 90 lashes and a small amount of prison time because she broke the Islamic law of meeting with an unrelated male, right? She was going to meet a male friend who had some photographs. She met with the guy, and then these seven rapists abducted them and, you know, gang raped her. Now, they did get between 10 months and 5 years in prison. And on appeal, her lawyer appealed and said that these rapists getting just 10 months to 5 years was far too light of a sentence. And the Saudi court agreed, and they increased the punishment to these men, and they made it up to 9 years in prison. So they did increase the punishment for the men. However, they also increased the punishment for the woman who was gang raped. Originally sentenced to 90 lashes, they increased her sentence to 6 months in prison and 200 lashes. 200 whips here. And their reasoning? You want to know why the Saudi court gave her more time? The judges more than doubled the punishment for the victim because of her attempt to aggravate and influence the judiciary through the media. Now, why is this such a big deal? I'll tell you why. Because I want to go back here to our dear leader, the chief executive, Bush. And this was his second inaugural address. It's a little bit of a long clip, but listen to this.
We will persistently clarify the choice before every ruler in every nation. The moral choice between oppression, which is always wrong, and freedom, which is eternally right. America will not pretend that jailed dissidents prefer their chains, or that women welcome humiliation and servitude, or that any human being aspires to live at the mercy of bullies. We will encourage reform in other governments by making clear that success in our relations will require the decent treatment of their own people.
Yeah. See, one of the justifications that we had for going into Iraq was how bad Saddam Hussein was treating his people and how bad their record on women's rights were. And yet there's Bush's buddies in Saudi Arabia, sentencing a woman who was raped to 6 months and 200 lashes. You think we'll be invading Saudi Arabia anytime soon? You think there are going to be any strong words from the Bush administration there on this gang rape? Let's turn to the Bush administration and see just exactly what is their statement on this situation. That's what I thought. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Yes, it's that time. It's the last segment of the day. The time when we take a look at our listener emails, the segment I call Spam, Spam, Spam. Although you're not spam, you're the emails I want to get. You're not telling me to enlarge anything, or you're not trying to give me money from Nigeria. You're the kind of emails I want to get. And if you want your email read on the air, send it to RadicalRuss@gmail.com. Now, Jamie writes in. Jamie wants to ask a bunch of questions about 9/11. Hijacked airliners flew all around the eastern U.S. for hours without military response. We still have not seen clear video of what happened to the Pentagon. And the World Trade Center 7 building was 350 feet from any tower that got hit, and yet it imploded in a controlled demolition. And it goes on to ask me to support 911truth.org and all these 9/11 conspiracy type websites, which I don't necessarily dismiss. But my point with 9/11 is this. There's enough questions to be asked without going into tinfoil hat land, like, why did they destroy all those tapes, the tapes that they had at the air traffic control and NORAD? They, you know, took the tapes and cut them up and put them into all these different garbage cans. Why did they do that? And, how did the president pass on the authority to the vice president when the Constitution makes no prescription for how the president should be able to do that? There's plenty of 9/11 questions without resorting to the false flag type of conspiracy theories. Not that they're wrong. I just think we should need to ask more questions before we get to that point. Now, Marion asks, writes, reacting to my question, what would you spend the Iraq quagmire money on instead of Iraq? And she says, health care for everyone. even George. So that's good. And so that'd be something to spend our money on, certainly. And then Patrick from Seattle wants to say, why do people say progressives don't like sports? He's a seasoned Seahawk ticket holder, and he thinks that there's plenty of progressives that like sports. Well, me too. And of course, I'm the big Green Bay Packers fan. So good luck to those Packers and to my listeners down there in Texas. I'm so sorry about you having to lose that game next week. That's going to be sad for you. Anyway, this is the Russ Belleville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We're here this bat time on this bat station every weekend, live and direct, usually from Portland, Oregon. And you can give us a call and talk about what's concerning you in this country of ours. The email address is radicalruss@gmail.com. And for some comments after the show and all those stories I didn't have time to get to today, you can check out the blog at radicalruss.net. Leave your comments. Write your own blog posts as well. It's the community, the online community, for truly radical progressives. I'm Radical Russ Belleville, wishing you a great Thanksgiving weekend. And I want to say that I am very thankful to Peter and Woody and Bill Press and all those folks at Center for American Progress who had the contest that got me on the air. I'm so glad to be talking to North America, and it's all about us. It's all about making our country work. Good day, everybody.